From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Spinster, it's an old-fashioned word with a hard edge. It evokes a time when women were expected to grow up, marry, have children, when single women were outliers, even outcasts. Now they are the majority. More than half of the women in America are living single. But still, the question of marriage can govern, shadow a woman's life. Author Kate Bolick says it shouldn't. She wants women to reclaim the word spinster and live their lives on their own terms. This hour on Point, a call to free women from the expectation of marriage. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Does our society still have a problem with single women of a certain age? Should it? Is it time for spinster power? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Jane Austen, famous spinster, classic author, was well aware of the challenges facing unmarried women in her time. In this 2005 adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, Charlotte Lucas, the 27-year-old best friend of Elizabeth Bennet, accepts a marriage proposal from the pompous Mr. Collins after Elizabeth turns him down. In this clip, a horrified Elizabeth, played by here by Keira Knightley, listens as Charlotte, played by Claudia Blakely, defends her choice.
There is no earthly reason why I shouldn't be as happy with him as any other.
But he's ridiculous.
Oh, hush. Not all of us can afford to be romantic. I've been offered a comfortable home and protection. There's a lot to be thankful for.
Charlotte.
I'm 27 years old. I've no money and no prospects. I'm already a burden to my parents. And I'm frightened.
Oh, dread. Almost to be a spinster. Another view of it, Kim Cattrall played Samantha Jones on HBO's Sex and the City, iconic show about unmarried women, making their way in New York. In this clip, 2004 retrospective documentary here, Cattrall says that the show tried to redefine what it means to be a single woman.
Being single used to mean that nobody wanted you. Now it means you're pretty sexy and you're taking your time deciding how you want your life to be and who you want to spend it with.
Kim Cattrall on Sex of the City and where it took us. Well, where are we now? Joining me now from New York, Kate Bolick, author of the new book, Spinster, Making a Life of One's Own. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. She's also a contributing editor at The Atlantic. Kate Bolick, welcome to On Point.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Is it still so dreadful? Kim Cattrall says no, or at least they tried to make it not so.
Well, it's certainly not as dreadful as it's been at certain points in history. But it's important to recognize, too, that Sex and the City was presenting a very specific archetype or way of being a single woman that was limiting in its own way. That, you know, to be a single woman was to be sexy and fabulous and frivolous, which is not what all women want to be.
I guess I'm still interested, though, in the sort of status report here. You start right off, top of the book, saying, it sounds a little Jane Austen. He's saying, whom to marry and when will it happen? These two questions define every woman's existence, regardless of where she was raised or what religion she does or doesn't practice. Is that really the central question of women's, young women's lives still today, Kate? Is that what you find?
Absolutely. And the key to that sentence is the word, the questions, that it's not that marriage itself governs us. It's the expectation that we'll do it, which is perfectly understandable given that our society is organized around family, marriage in the nuclear family. So it's not bizarre that is the expectation that people grow up with.
So what are you pushing for? You take us way back a century or so to look at Edna St. Vincent Millay, Edith Wharton and more. We'll look at some of that, but what's the banner that you're raising here? If you want to break out of that sort of ironclad expectation, you'll grow up, you'll mature, you'll get married, you'll have kids. What's the alternative you're proposing?
Well, I wanted to show with the book the long history of the public conversation and interior private conversation around these questions of how to live a life. And show that the world most women avoid, the unmarried, childless state, is one that many women, past and present, thrive within. But their realities have been sidelined and considered obscure or, as you were mentioning, you know, they're outliers. So I wanted to show some of that history and place our contemporary wonderings about how to live a life within its historical context.
Why go so far back? Why not look at single women today of a certain age that might have at one time been called spinsters and look at how they're making it work?
Oh, that would be a fascinating book as well, I think. For me personally, the historical resonance of the condition of being single is what interests me the most. And you know, so we can start with the word spinster itself. And the reason I used it as the title of my book is because it's such a deliciously weird term that immediately...
It really is. So weird.
Yeah. And it broadcasts our ambivalence and confusion around the single woman, because we all think of the spinster, we all know who she is. She's a lonely, repressed, frigid old woman who lives alone with her cats. And we think that she was always maligned by society, but she wasn't. There have been these moments in history when the single woman was celebrated to some extent, not...
When was that? Not the Salem witch trials, not when I was playing a card. Remember a card game called Old Maid? It used to
yes.
be run? And that's the last card you wanted to possibly have in your hand? I mean, when? What's the period you're thinking of?
Well, the 1830s and 40s was a time of historian Lee Chambers-Shiller calls it the cult of single blessedness, when women like Louisa May Alcott mm-hmm. were proudly unmarried. And, in my book, I write about how Massachusetts, I think of it as spinster territory, because for a while it had more single women than any other state in the Union. And that's because there was a legacy of intellectualism that extended to both genders, and also because of the losses sustained by the war. You know, after every war, there's always a surge in the single female population. Massachusetts has an inspiring history of spinsterdom after the witch trials. but I see in part, women like Louisa May Alcott were, that was the backlash against how spinsters had been treated since the founding of this country. And the reason spinsters were maligned originally is because we came over here to start a new population, and we needed women to be getting married and giving birth. So if by 23 you weren't doing either of those things, you were an actual menace to society, and you were called a spinster. If by 26 you were still unmarried, you were called a thornback, which was a species of flat, spiny fish, and that term has not stuck around.
Remind us of the demographics, Kate. What they were back when marriage was sort of the ironclad rule, though it was never the universal rule, of course, and what they are now around single women and their numbers in society.
I find it best to visualize these numbers like a V. So we start with the year 1890, which was a very positive moment. The late 1800s were a positive moment for single women just because we had more of them than ever before. They were flooding the workplace and universities. So in 1890, 34% of women were single. And then that number drops down 1% per decade. Then we get down to 1950, when we hit an all-time low of 17% of women were single.
Wow.
And the 50s were absolutely the worst time in the history of this country to be a single woman. And then the rate of the rise climbs 2% each decade up until, the present day, 53% of women over 18 are unmarried. So it's a very neat V, figure to look at it like that.
At 53%, and of course that includes many women who presumably will go on to be married, but that's a lot of single women. You would think that would be enough just demographically to be done with the old sort of leaden stereotypes and cliches.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that's happening already. So it's the numbers are undeniable. So it's right now we're talking a bit about a power in numbers story, that the single woman has been maligned in the past because there just weren't enough of her to be visible. But now there are so many, and that's changing attitudes slowly. But, it's all happened so quickly before any of us can catch up. So we're catching up to it with our attitudes and the ways in which we talk about and think about single women is catching up with the demographic, which has been moving so swiftly.
So describe for us your ideal image here of a woman's freedom. You name the age to look at life in a different way. What is it?
Oh, just to feel the measure of her own powers, and that we live at a time when we are given so many opportunities to do whatever we want. And women before us have fought very hard to give us these rights and opportunities. And I just want young women to feel that they can pursue them without being haunted by this fear of the future. And, another thing that's interesting to me about the word spinster is how it sticks around. It's an archaic term, but it haunts us still. And it's because women are still haunted by the idea that they must marry or otherwise they'll wind up alone. And alone being a lonely old spinster, this old outdated archetype. So it's this ghost exists in order to haunt us. So it's time to get rid of that ghost.
I mean, you say it sticks around. We know the word, but I have to say I never hear it. Until I picked your book up, I can't remember the last time I heard the word.
Yeah, nobody uses it. I mean, it's used jokingly among women all the time. Everyone, you know, if you're going through, you're single and you're looking for someone and you say to your friend, ugh, I'm going to end up a lonely old spinster, you know. So it's used self-deprecatingly and as a joke.
You're not anti-marriage. You're just pro-freedom, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Do people look like you're trying to start a revolution with spinster power here or just say, of course?
I love this term, spinster power. It's great.
We'll see. We'll see what our listeners think of it. Kate Bullock's new book is Spinster, Making a Life of One's Own. Here's Jenny Lewis with Just One of the Guys. Kate Bullock, stand by in New York. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
No matter how I try to be just one of the guys, there's a little something inside that won't let me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with writer Kate Bullock about her call for spinster power, her call to free women from the expectation of marriage, free women to embrace, if they choose, the unmarried life. Her new book is Spinster, Making a Life of One's Own. Kate, we've got lots of callers to get to, but a little tape here. This is from 2012, WNYC reporter Kathleen Horan went out in the streets of New York to gauge reactions to the word spinster. Here she asks an older woman about the word. The woman does not have a positive impression.
What's her status? What's her place in life? I mean, spinster.
Well, she doesn't have a man. She lives alone, and she's unhappy.
But then marriage is not always so inviting either. 1978 film An Unmarried Woman, Jill Claybaugh plays Erica. She has to rebuild her identity after her husband leaves her for a younger woman. And here she talks to her teenage daughter, Patty, played by Lisa Lucas, who hasn't seen many examples of successful couples.
Never getting married.
You will.
Don't be so sure.
Why not?
Why should I? I mean, everybody I know is married is either miserable or divorced. I don't want that.
Oh, Patty, that's ridiculous. There's a lot of happily married couples.
Name three.
I'll have to think about it.
Yeah.
And still, let's stick with the movies for just a second. Up in the Air, 2009, George Clooney as Ryan, flies around the country firing people. Anna Kendrick plays his driven young assistant, Natalie, and Vera Farmiga plays his love interest, Alex. Distraught young Natalie comes to Ryan and Alex when her boyfriend breaks up with her via text message, and here the young woman lays out her feelings of what it's like to, well, life doesn't have meaning without a man.
When I was 16, I thought by 23, I'd be married, maybe have a kid, corner office by day, entertaining at night. I was supposed to be driving a Grand Cherokee by now.
Yeah, life can underwhelm you that way.
I don't want to say anything that's anti-feminist. I really appreciate everything that your generation did for me.
It was our pleasure.
Well done.
But sometimes it feels like no matter how much success I have, it's not going to matter until I find the right guy.
Supposed to be driving the Grand Cherokee, but now there's the whole package. Kate Bullock, the movies go on and on and on with this. I mean, you're quite right. It's a big thing in popular culture. And you're trying to, what, take the next step here. And a lot of listeners are paying close attention. Let me bring them in with you, if I may. Lisa in Virginia Beach, Virginia. You're on the air with Kate Bullock.
Hi, Tom. I'm not calling because of why isn't it such a negative word? I am not sitting at home spinning wool. I am. When you use the word, you say bachelor, it's just a man that isn't married. So why is it that I'm, quote, a spinster? I'm single. That's it. And
Kate, why not just single? You're driving Lisa crazy by bringing a spinster back, Kate.
It's fine with me if people don't want to take on the term spinster for themselves. I just think it's a very useful term and a fun one. I've personally have always had very positive associations with the spinster. The spinster to me, the historic classic pure spinster, is an image of self-reliance and dignity. Because part of the, you know, throughout the 18 and 1900s, part of the respectability that a spinster possessed was based on her being celibate, because it was presumed that she didn't have sex because she wasn't married, and that was the only respectable way to have sex. So I see it as an image of dignity, self-reliance, and autonomy. I've always been charmed by it.
Though you're moving well past the presumption of celibacy in this status.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the neo-spinster or the neo-neo-spinster, you know, is a woman who can have sex and romance and relationships, but it's just about not being defined by a relationship, not organizing your life around a relationship.
It's funny. It's hard to know what terrain we're on exactly sometimes. I mean, we're way past Sex and the City and all that now, and yet, you know, we get a call, Elisa, and she's thinking about spinning wool right away, still a connotation of a word. Maybe we've made all kinds of progress, and maybe we haven't. Debbie, another in Virginia, Stanton, Virginia. Debbie, you're on.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. How about you, Debbie?
I'm good. I'm 53. I'm unmarried. I'm happy. But when I moved to Virginia and purchased my home, I found other women here were dumbfounded that I was doing so without the benefits of a man in my life.
They thought you just missed a necessary step, or what?
I think they were not used to seeing a single woman being so independent.
Were they offended or leery or just didn't know how to handle you?
I don't think they knew how to handle it.
Kate, you must have talked with Debbie, I appreciate your call, and I'm glad you made your way. Kate, you must have talked with a lot of women about this at this point. What's the range of responses? Here's Debbie. She's single. She's 53. You know, you pick the age. At a certain point, you're young enough, people are still thinking, oh, well, she's single, she'll marry. But when it's clear you aren't or won't or may not, what's the range of reactions you're hearing, Kate?
Yeah, I think it varies by age and also where in the country that you are. You know, urban areas tend to be much more accepting of single people. It's much easier in many ways to be single in cities. But there's also, I've seen something happen, and I've read about this happening as well, that if a woman has never been married and reaches around the age of 35, again and again, there's a she goes through an internal paradigm shift where she had been thinking that she would get married just because that's what people do. And then she wakes up one day and looks around and realizes she's not, and that, in fact, she's quite happy with her life the way that it is and is able to let go of that expectation and feel very good about her life. And so that's the image of the strong spinster that is so powerful and you know, positive and great to see, but that's, I think it can be hard for women to get there.
Take us back to some of the thinking of the women that you profile in your book, Spinster. You've got the great essayist, Maeve Brennan. You've got the columnist, Neith Boyce. You've got Edna St. Vincent Millay, of course, the poet, and Edith Wharton, of course, the novelist, and Charlotte Perkins Gilman, a feminist social reformer. Take us into some of their insights, their struggles, their attitudes.
So all of these women were married at one point in their lives, and they all had highly ambivalent relationships to marriage, which they were very articulate about. And that's what drew me to them, was the thinking that they were doing around these questions. And, you know, I'd like to read a quote to you from Edith Wharton that I think beautifully sums up what I'm talking about. And it's from a letter that she wrote to a friend. And she says, "I believe I know the only known cure, which is to make one center of life inside of oneself, not selfishly or excludingly, but with a kind of unassailable serenity, to decorate one's inner house so richly that one is content there, glad to welcome anyone who wants to come and stay, but happy all the same when one is inevitably alone." I love that. And I love how it speaks to the fact that all of us are alone at different points of our lives. Arguably, we're alone now longer more than ever between the rising age of marriage, the the ubiquity of divorce are increasingly long lifespans, meaning, you know, we can be widowed for a very long time. And so learning how to be alone and feel comfortable and strong while being alone is a very useful skill to have, given that we'll all be alone.
And of course, people, for all kinds of different reasons, making their own decisions, some very prominent. Here's a little bit. This is Oprah Winfrey talking about why she has never married. And she talks about her long-term relationship with her boyfriend, Stedman Graham. They've been together since 1986. But marriage, says Oprah, of course, she's kind of in a class of her own. But no to that.
If I were going to be married, I think the person that I've chosen to partner with over these years would be a wonderful person to do that with. I think that had we gotten married, we probably would have been divorced by now. And he would agree. He would agree because I really am my own woman. And I don't really conform very well to other people's ideas about who and what I should be. You know, being married calls for some conformity. It does. Mm-hmm.
Oprah, billionaire, in a class of her own. Not everybody, even prominent, so happy about it. Academy Award-winning actress Diane Keaton dated some of the biggest names in Hollywood, never married. And here she was last year talking with Today Show host Matt Lauer, said she regrets it.
You're right about the men you dated, yeah. Diane. You never married.
I did meet a few.
Right? You did. Mm-hmm. You did. You dated some of the big names in Hollywood.
Yeah, at the
Do you
time,
regret not marrying?
Do I regret not marrying? Yeah, I do.
Yeah?
I do.
What do you make of regret, not regret? You know, Oprah with her sort of big, independent boss lady attitude, Diane Keaton with her regrets?
I love that they represent opposite ends of the spectrum like that. And it really is a spectrum of feeling and thinking. You know, I would say to Diane Keaton that it's not too late. She could still get married anytime if she wants to. So it's not like that ship has sailed. But there is a lot of doubt and confusion around the question, and that's natural. And regret is part of life. I think there's no way to get out of life without some regrets.
Are you writing about women of a certain class, even women of a certain race or certain sexuality? I mean, there are a lot of lesbian women now for whom this is not an entirely different conversation. They may very well still couple, but it has all of its own connotations. If you look beyond... Look to communities of color where you've got some very high rates of unmarried women. I wonder if they relate to the kind of struggle that you're communicating here.
Well, I think it's definitely a struggle and an idea that crosses all races and groups. And it is historically a story of privilege in the sense that only wealthy women could afford to live alone. And I've noticed that among the friends I know, it's friends who grew up in wealthy families have a lot of fabulous, great spinster aunts. And I don't have any of them in my family tree because we were all, you know, Irish scullery maids and domestic servants and farmers in North Carolina and so forth. So there wasn't the people in my lineage didn't have the freedom to live alone. And today... You know, definitely more women are able to make enough money in order to live alone. But it's still expensive, for sure. In my book, the five women I write about are all white. And at first that disturbed me. I felt like I was narrowing the story too much. And I wanted to be able to find a graceful way to be including women of color. But I couldn't because these were the women who had actually influenced me over the course of my own life. And I wanted to be telling a true story. But also I was thinking about it in terms of, you know, I'm thinking of each of the women I write about in relation to her own historical context and social circumstances. And the white female experience and the African-American female experience have a lot of similarities but a lot of differences. And I would love to see a whole book about the African-American single female experience because I think there are other forces and pressures coming from different directions.
Kate Bullock's book is Spinster. You write, Kate, that in your early 20s, you had something you called to yourself anyway, the spinster wish. What did that mean? What were you thinking of?
To me, I was a girl who spent all of her time having long-term boyfriends. I was just, you know, there's some people who are like that. And I loved my boyfriends and loved being with them, but I also had a craving for solitude and autonomy that I didn't know how to affect at the time. And so for me, I was shocked, by the way, to discover that term, the spinster wish, in my journals. I didn't remember thinking of it like that. But when I started writing the book and realized I had to kind of touch on the period in my early 20s, there it was. I'm talking about how great it feels when my boyfriend goes back to his house and I have a whole weekend to myself to do whatever I want, to read or take a walk or nap and just be on my own with my own thoughts. And so that's how, in a way, that's how the story began, was just a wish for solitude and a curiosity about what it would mean to be experiencing the world by myself more than with somebody else.
Christine, Concord, Massachusetts. Christine, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Kate Bullock.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Hi. I just want to say that although I read about Ms. Bullock's book on The Atlantic, and I thought it was a very elegant description of women, I just want to say that from my experience, being a 49-year-old woman, having many single friends currently in the Boston area, I've never heard the word spinster in the past 20, 25 years. And my friends are all independent, strong, comfortable in their skin, enjoying their lives, not worrying about whether or not they're going to get married. And they range in age from 28 to 55, my single friends. Mm-hmm. And I just want full disclosure, I am married. I married a little bit later. And I still, although I'm married to a wonderful man, we have our own lives. He just recently traveled. And I travel at least once a year with my single friends, and we've gone to Europe a few times and other places. So I just want to present a different.
So you're not buying the premise, in a way, Christine, that there's a real headwind here for single women.
Not for the friends that I have. I'm here and I'm white, and my friends are all college graduates. So to Ms. Bullock's point before that, I only represent a very small fraction, but none of my friends, and I'm really strong when I say this, express any of the feelings or sentiment that Ms. Bullock wrote about.
Kate, how about it? We're past that. Not a problem in Christine's circle.
Oh, I mean, I agree absolutely. It's the same with my own circle of friends, and I talk to many women who feel the same way. So, but I also talk to a lot of women who don't. And when I published that Atlantic cover story in 2011, I started hearing from women all over the country and even the world saying, thank you for reflecting my experience, that I'm a strong, independent woman living my life, feeling very happy about it. But people are always questioning me and making me feel weird, and it can often feel very uncomfortable to me. And so thank you for making me feel more visible and left and less alone. So it's I used the word spectrum before, but I think that, this is a sociological story, a broad spectrum story, but also a very individual one. It depends on the individual.
You don't know me. Don't try to change me in any way. You don't own me. Don't tie me down, 'cause I'd never stay.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with writer Kate Bullock about her call for spinster power, her call to free women from the expectation of marriage, free women to embrace, if they choose, the unmarried life. Her new book is Spinster, Making a Life of One's Own. I love all this tape. House of Mirth, Edith Wharton's most famous novel. One of the women that Kate writes about in her book, protagonist Lily Bart, well-born but penniless and must marry well to avoid, in that time, destitution. In this clip from the 2000 adaptation with Gillian Anderson as Lily, she speaks with Lawrence Selden, Eric Stoltz, the man she loves but will not marry because his social standing is too low. She's reluctant to marry at all.
I've been about too long. People are getting tired of me. They are beginning to say that I ought to marry.
Isn't marriage your vocation? Isn't it what you're all brought up for?
I suppose so.
So why not take the plunge and have it over?
Well, okay, you may, says Kate, but pick your time and pick your and have your choice. Here's Condoleezza Rice, another famously single woman of a certain stature. She was talking with Valerie Jarrett, President Obama's big advisor, and journalist Leslie Stahl and Gail King, talking about why Condoleezza Rice never married.
But sequencing in life is important, and it's not just around family. People have asked me, why didn't you get married? I say, well, because I never found anybody I wanted to live with. It was not a statement about my work life.
It is hard out there.
That's right. But the key is there is some sequencing in life. Yeah. There will be times in life when you have to focus in and do something in a very hard way. There are other times in life when perhaps you can step back and do other things.
Sequencing, says Condoleezza Rice. And of course, she may marry. She's a powerful woman. She'll do what she likes. Kate, do you have an anti-marriage stance here or just a pro-freedom philosophy?
Yeah, I don't have an anti-marriage stance. I can get into one pretty easily, but I generally don't feel that way. And I love this. I have not heard Condoleezza Rice talk about this idea of sequencing, and I think that's a beautiful way of putting it, that our life is made up of many phases that we can do different things with. And that's another way to be thinking about, you know, when you're a young woman setting off on the long road of your life, what do you want to do with the powers that you have at each stage of your life? How do you want to use them? And there's no specific order that needs to be done.
Let's roll back just a little bit. I'm sure it didn't only catch my ear. So you're not anti-marriage, but you've got an anti-marriage argument. Let's hear it.
You know what? I don't even have an argument. I would just say that, you know, even over the course of writing the book, I came to feel more close to anti-marriage than I had when I had started out. Before, I had felt just sort of neutral, like, sure, it's something that some people like to do. And I would think that being happily married with somebody who is a true partner and equal is among the most excellent ways to live. But it's rare. Not everyone is so lucky, as we know, that we all know so many bad marriages. And so how do I get to an anti-marriage place? Well, just, I don't know. I just see so many unhappy marriages around me. So it's not hard to feel like it's an unappealing way to be. But that's also, when I say that, I think that's a very limited way of looking at it, because it's just, confirmation bias or whatever.
You can't presume that's all paradise, though, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. And so for me, it's so strange. You know, of course, being single, this conversation is directly related to marriage, but I think very little about marriage. I think much more about what it means to be single. And that's why, you know, the women in the book, although they were all married at some point, what is so interesting is the kind of messiness or ambivalence and the ways in which they moved in and out of married states and were very powerful during those portions of their lives when they were unmarried. There was an unfetteredness, an ability to focus down, just as Condoleezza Rice was saying, you know, that kind of sequencing idea.
Share
really
some
resonates.
More from some of your profiled women here. They're such great figures in the St.
Well,
Vincent Millay, Edith,
I was,
and Warden.
Yeah, I was so surprised. Neith Boyce was my first discovery. So I found her in the year 2000, and she was a journalist in the, around the turn of the century and also a novelist. And my introduction to her was the column she wrote for Vogue in the year 1898 called The Bachelor Girl about her decision to never marry. And she ended up, at the moment in time when I found her, she was my heroine. And then when I started doing research and found out about her life, I was at first very disappointed to discover that she got married not long after finishing that column.
So she fell off
this pedestal. And that's the danger of heroines, by the way, I think, is one of the dangers of heroines. But so she went on to have one of the most famous public open marriages of the turn of the century. And her husband, Hutchins Hapgood, went on to write a memoir called Story of a Lover about their open marriage. And so that was very interesting to me to realize that to learn that there had been a public conversation around these kinds of unconventional arrangements at that point in time. I thought that it all happened during the second wave of the women's movement. I didn't know that there was this other previous blip.
Lots of response for you in 2015 here. Dee writes, I'm 62, unmarried and happy. This is on Twitter. was called the old maid in the boardroom by the board president recently. So something,
wow.
Something's out there. Okay, wow, yeah. Becky says, the pressure is great to meet someone. My aunt told me she was praying for me. I appreciate it, but I live good single life. You can put a lot in a tweet. Amber, this is from Facebook, says, as a 34-year-old single woman who's never married, has no kids, and is successful, I hate the question from potential suitors, why are you single? Which I tend to answer with the question, why not? And here's one more from the website. Hello Kitty writes to us. She says, essentially, all this unconscious, antiquated belief that women cannot be autonomous over their lives, that they're only caretaking baby machines, needs to be wiped out. It's outdated and controlling. You do you. Forget what other people think. Women and men alike. Ashley in Mount Vernon, Kentucky. Ashley, thank you for calling. You're on with Kate Bolick.
Hello. I just wanted to thank you. When I was in my 20s, I lived alone and always had the question, why don't you live with your boyfriend? And I never knew how to express it, and I'm so happy that somebody was able to write a book about it.
Good.
So,
sort of push aside the need for any apology about it. Just do what you're doing.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, because, like I said, I never knew how to express why it was important to me to live on my own.
Yeah.
And not be
judged or called out for it. Ashley, I appreciate your call. And if I may get one more from New Orleans, Sam, you're on the air with Kate.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Ms. Bolick. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I am thinking is I've been with my boyfriend since we were 18, but we've never married. and I'm 29. And we recently had a child together. And we don't really plan on getting married. And I think a lot of that has to do with my parents being divorced.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder how the decision, you know, to have a child or not factors into the decision to marry or not. Because I can tell you that as much as he drives me insane, sometimes he's a huge part of raising our daughter. And, when I think about not doing it with him to make certain parts of my life better, there's all these cons that kind of come up because he's so integral at the same time. And I just wonder how the decision to have children would factor in to this decision for a certain kind of independence.
Yeah, it's a good question, especially these days when there's a fair amount of freedom to do all kinds of things. Kate, reproduction or children in any case, and the single life, the spinster life, if you will?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Have been doing some reporting recently on single mothers by choice or choice moms, women who decide to have children on their own. And that's another, one of these new things that's happening in our modern world. And all of the women I spoke with were, had hoped to marry someday and do things that way and reached a point where they realized that wasn't going to happen and that having a child was more important to them than anything else and went ahead and did it. And for them, they've actually been finding raising a child on their own to be really rewarding and in certain ways liberating to not have a partner, which really surprised me to hear that. Because we all know that raising children is very hard and time consuming. But it's certainly, the way it fits into my own trajectory is that I'm someone who has never had a strong urge to have a child. So if I had, I would have been feeling much more interested in marriage, I would think. But being ambivalent made me, just less interested.
It was also your own experience. Your mother died sadly too young, and this seems to have played importantly into your thinking about all of this. Why, Kate? How?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, she died when she was 52, quite suddenly, of cancer. I was 23 at the time. I saw in her someone who, she loved being a wife and mother. She was very happy with her life, and I didn't feel any resentments coming off of her for any of the choices that she had made. But she was very frustrated with her work life, and that was because she had gotten married when she was in her 20s and raised my brother and me, and didn't start finding herself, quote unquote, until her 30s. And It was very exciting as a kid to watch her become bigger and stronger and be doing more things out in the world. And she became a writer and started traveling everywhere and being a reporter. And it was exciting. And so then it felt just extra tragic to have her die at 52 and not have more time to keep doing the things that she wanted to do. And so I felt, you know, losing her right there on the cusp of my own adulthood, and I'm setting out on my life. And I thought, well, you know, I want to be a writer. That's what I want to do. And that's what my mom wanted to do. And that's what she wanted for me as well. So I'm going to set my lights on that goal or whatever the phrasing is, you know, but that's what, that's how I'm steering my own ship, is I'm going to become a writer, and it's going to be hard, and it's going to take a long time. And, but that's my primary goal, my primary romance, you know, and that's not a story to me about choosing career or work over everything else. That's about choosing the self and vocation and knowing my own limits and knowing how much I had to learn and grow to become the person I wanted to be. And I just didn't want anything to get in the way of that. And I felt also that my mother had instilled in me so many positive values and qualities that I wanted to give time to let those flourish, in a way that she would have wanted them to. And so to me, if I had been putting all of my energies into marriage and a relationship, I felt, you know, perhaps naively and wrongly, but the way I felt at the time was that that would get in the way of the things that I needed to do to become the person I wanted to become. And so I wanted to become the person I wanted to be first. And then I could think about whether or not I was ready to partner with somebody else.
Well, that hits home. Anne in Madison, Wisconsin. Anne, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I am 57 years old. I've been married 3 times to 3 good men. They were all good men. But I have always done better personally during the times that I was single. I have grown more. I'm single now. Mm-hmm. I've grown more during the times I was single. I didn't feel limited if I wanted, you know, even though they didn't try to control me, there's still that other person that you have to take into account. You have to take, you know, what do they want to eat? Where are they going to want to go? What time do they want to get up? I don't want to deal with any of that. I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it way I want to do it.
So, Anne, are you glad for Kate championing this notion of spinsterhood as a positive?
Oh, absolutely. I am.
And I love hearing that you've gone in and out of the married and single states. And that, to me, seems, I don't know, also the most modern way of living, that now that we can do anything, we have the flexibility to, be in different kinds of arrangements. There's no one specific correct and only right way to be.
Of course, we've got others. Mango Jam writes to us, "You're late to this party. Many feminists have embraced the term in the spirit of spinster for decades now. This embrace has given an entire generation of women, including myself, the option to make this wonderful choice." What about the other old thing? Spinster may be an old idea, but there's another idea of romance and lifelong love, heterosexual or otherwise.
Which I think is beautiful. You know, I think it's wonderful when that happens. And what that writer Inner was saying about feminists embracing this decades now, absolutely. This has been going on in certain circles for quite a long time. I don't consider myself late to the game at all. I think of, you know, I was reading those women and those ideas in college and was stunned to come out into the world in the workforce and realize how sexist it was and how those ideas had not gone mass. And the reason they hadn't is because there weren't the numbers that we have now. So it's I think we're at a moment now where we can take these ideas that have been germinating and people in certain circles have been working on for quite a long time, and now they can make a bigger impact.
Freedom. What's your game plan, Kate? Are you in relationship? Are you spinster for the long haul? Do you know?
I'm currently seeing a really wonderful man, and I have been throughout the whole course of this book. So, it's I'm a spinster in love.
Did your publisher forbid you to get engaged before the book came out?
No, and there's a lot of joking about that for sure.
We're going to be watching you. You're a suspect. Kate Bullock, listen, thank you very much for this, and I appreciate your time. She writes, I grant that a wholesale reclamation of the word spinster is a tall order. My aim is more modest, to offer it up as a shorthand for holding on to that in you, which is independent and self-sufficient, whether you're single or coupled. Kate Bullock in Spinster, Making a Life of One's Own. Kate, thank you very much for being with us.
Tom, thank you so much. This was wonderful.
We'll go out enjoying a little Nina Simone, Marriage is for Old Folks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
And with zest, who needs corroding in some vulture's nest? I gotta fly my wings, go places, do things. My freedom bells really gonna ring.